When I was in seventh grade, we were having a discussion about Mashiach, and a classmate of mine remarked, she said, "I don't know if I want Mashiach to come. I don't want my life to change. I like it here in America. I don't know if I want to live in Eretz Yisrael." I remember thinking at the time that I had never heard before anybody who was hesitant about Mashiach coming. I always thought that this is something that we all longed for and hoped for. I think part of my classmate's hesitation was that unknown factor of Mashiach. There's just so much that we don't know what's going to be when Mashiach comes. In April of 2020, so many of us thought that Pesach, that Mashiach could really come. And along with the excitement, I felt a certain degree of apprehension. I understood where my classmate was coming from because we were about to experience something perhaps that we had never experienced before. And a part of that unknown was kind of scary for me. But I told myself something that I had heard once, which is that tzaddikim, who have such a better understanding of what life is going to be like when Mashiach comes, they tell us that this is something that's good for us. This is something that we should want for ourselves. And so with that, I'm able to kind of put aside some of my hesitation, some of my fears, and really look forward to Mashiach coming. I think another part of my classmate's hesitation about Mashiach coming is just the fact that she's a seventh grader and she hasn't had certain life's experiences. And she just doesn't have that keen awareness that perhaps we have when we're more mature and have experienced more about life, just how much we need Mashiach. I think part of that awareness is the fact that we live in a post-9/11 world. When I was in seminary, one of my teachers said to us that prior to 9/11, many young American couples held on to their American passports as though if anything got really too bad in Eretz Yisrael in terms of the terrorist attacks, they could return to the United States of America. And then 9/11 happened, and it kind of shattered that illusion that America somehow is that safe haven from our enemies in Golos. Even for those who live in Eretz Yisrael, they're still in Golos. The Anshei Knesset HaGedola lived at the beginning of Bayis Sheni. They composed Shmona Esrei. And if you realize that, then you would ask a certain question, which is, how come so many of those brachos in Shmona Esrei have to do with Geula if they're living at a time of Geula? What does it mean, V'ilu Yerushalayim Berachamim Tashuv? What does it mean, Hashem, please restore Yerushalayim? What does it mean in Ratzei V'Hashevis HaAvoda? Return the Avoda. They live in Yerushalayim. They're serving Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. And the answer is that most members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola were Nevi'im. And they knew that Bayis Sheni was not the ultimate Geula. They knew that Hashem was allowing us to catch our breath in Golos, but that this was not ultimately Bias HaMashiach. So I think in a similar vein, Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael in a time of Golos, it's such a bracha, and there's so many advantages of living in Eretz Yisrael even in a time of Golos. But there's the same awareness, similar to Anshei Knesset HaGedola living during Bayis Sheni, that it's still not Geula. When there were many terror attacks in France, Benjamin Netanyahu, he addressed French Jewry, and he said to them, "French Jews, come home." And there was an article that I was reading where it was a retort to Benjamin Netanyahu's statement, and it listed all these terror attacks against Jews. And the terror attacks were kind of vague in their descriptions. You really didn't know where they had taken place, but you assumed that they were in France. But at the conclusion of the article, the author wrote, and he stated, "Prime Minister, all of these very sad attacks against Jews occurred in the modern state of Israel." And so the message of the author was that it's really not poshut for a Yid living anywhere in Golos. if for no other reason than just the safety of all Yidden, that's enough of an impetus to want Mashiach, but there are many added advantages. We need Mashiach for so many different reasons. One of them is there was a Kolel family, and they lost their daughter. She was Nifter. And I went to the Levaya, and the father, in his hesped for his daughter, he said he so looks forward to Mashiach coming because we believe in Tchias HaMesim. It's one of the Yud Gimel Ikarim, the reality that Hashem will revive those loved ones who we've lost. And he said, I look so forward to be reunited with my little girl. Additional benefits of Mashiach coming. There are so many problems that will only be fully resolved with Bias HaMashiach. As a Mechanecha, so many girls confide in me what's going on in their lives. And I regularly will comment to them that the ultimate Yeshua is going to come when Mashiach comes. On a lighter note, it doesn't have to be such a serious problem. But my sister in Eretz Yisrael is having a bar mitzvah this summer, and we're trying to figure out how we can be there and attend the simcha. And we're having a lot of hurdles because of COVID restrictions. But my sister, and we're also saying this back and forth to one another, that hopefully Mashiach will come and then this will be a non-issue. So with Mashiach's arrival, just that idea of that, you know, we won't have some of the current problems in Galus, even the more trivial ones of just wanting to be with one another. There is a benefit of Bias HaMashiach that I don't think we discuss very much, and that is the clarity that comes with Mashiach. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu. The pasuk writes, "Vatehi ha'emes ne'adares." Truth will be obscured. And the Gemara explains that we're talking about a time before Mashiach when it's really difficult to identify what's right. I felt this during COVID, where I didn't know, should I wear a mask while I'm teaching? The state had a mask mandate. Can I remove it? Am I a bad role model? I just wanted to do what was right, and it was very unclear to me what the right thing to do was. I know communities grappled with this, with opening schools, with opening shuls. What's the right thing to do? With Mashiach coming, MS will not be ne'adaris anymore. Yeshayahu also states, "Ushavta mayim besason mimayne ha'yeshua." With Mashiach coming, teachers will be the wellsprings from which students will draw endless supplies of water. What does that mean? Rashi explains, there are times that my Talmidos will ask me excellent, excellent questions, and I don't know the answers to them. And I'll tell them, girls, the answers are out there. We just have to continue searching for them. Anytime we have a question on any aspect of Tanakh, any aspect of Frumkeit or life, with Mashiach coming, we will have the answers to those questions. And not only will the teachers be able to have this endless supply of water for their students, but the students will be able to drink those answers. In other words, sometimes my Talmidos ask me questions and I do know the answers, but they're not ready to hear them. And so when Mashiach comes, they will also be able to have those teshuvos be absorbed into their neshamos and really accept the answers. So I think that we are all convinced that we need Mashiach. We are not seventh graders in a pre-9/11 world. We have this keen awareness that we need Mashiach. So how can we bring him? So if you look at the word gola, which means galus, and the word geula, which means redemption, they have very similar spellings, gimel vav lamed hey in both. The only difference between these very different concepts is an aleph in geula. So what changes the gola to geula? In aleph. An aleph represents achdos. We can change galus to geula if we get along with one another. Shalom is the key to bringing Mashiach. And one of the sources for this idea is a Gemara in Menachos. I'm going to read to you what the Gemara writes. Yavo Yedid ben Yedid, v'yivne Yedid li Yedid, b'chalko shel Yedid v'yizchapru bo Yedidim. Let the Yedid come, who's the son of the Yedid, and build the Yedid, for the Yedid in the portion of Yedid. And thereby Yedidim will gain atonement. So if you haven't noticed, there are a lot of mentions of Yedid in this Gemara. So the Gemara continues to elucidate and identify who or what all the Yedidim are. So the Gemara says, Yavo Yedid, that Shlomo. Let Shlomo HaMelech, who he had another name, it was Yedid, let him come, and he's Ben Yedid. In Yirmiyahu, Perek Yed Aleph, Pasuk Tesvav, Avram Avinu is referred to as Yedid. So Shlomo is the descendant of the first Jew, Avraham, who's referred to as Yedid. And let Shlomo Yivne Yedid, let him build the Beis HaMikdash. In Tehillim, Perek Chof Dalet, Pasuk Beis, the Beis HaMikdash is referred to as Yedid, my Yedidus Mishkenosecha. And where is this Beis HaMikdash located? In the Chelek of Yedid. That is in Vezos HaBracha. In Vezos HaBracha, Binyamin is referred to as Yedid. And this Beis HaMikdash will be built Li Yedid. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Shiras HaKerem, in Sefer Yeshayahu, it's written in Perek Hei, Pasuk Aleph, Ashira Nali Yedidi, I will sing to my beloved. Hashem is referred to as Yedid. V'yischapru bo Yedidim, and with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, Klal Yisrael, who are referred to as Yedidim in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Zion, will gain atonement. So Rav Wolba asks, why, when discussing the building of the Beis HaMikdash, are there so many references to Yedid? And he says, when you think about it, Yedid stands for Yad Yad, hand in hand. Picture the scene, two little kids holding hands, two people clasping arms. What's that an image of? That's an image of Shalom. That's an image of peace. Rav Wolba says what the Gemara in Menachos is teaching us is that how will we get the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt? When we have Yedidos, when we have hands in hands, when Klal Yisrael are getting along. The Gemara in Brachos says that there are three images, three pictures of Shalom. There's a Nahara river at Tzipor, which is a bird, and a Kedera, which is a pot. Now, what on earth is the Gemara in Brachos teaching us? Why are these three things associated with Shalom? In Pirkei Avos, we're taught that Kina, Taiva, and Kavod are terrible midos. They actually very much compromise our relationships with other people. And so the Nahar Tzipor and Kedera are to counteract these midos. In fact, anybody who's grappling with those midos of kina, taiva, and kavod should picture certain images to help be miskaber over those midos. So let's start with the nahar, with the river. Which mida is that coming to counter? That's coming to counter kina. What is kina? Kina is feeling, I resent what you have. It's no fair. It should be mine. I want it for myself. The Nahar teaches us, don't feel that way. A Nahar is this powerful force, rushing water. As long as it stays within its boundaries, within its borders, it's a positive, positive force. But if it overflows, then it's dangerous, then it's damaging. And that's the message to the Baal Kina. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you a beautiful life, has given you an arsenal of tools that you need to accomplish your mission. Stay within those borders. Don't look at what he has or what she just got. It has nothing to do with you. The Gemara in Yuma tells a profound idea that can help us really overcome kina anytime we feel it bubbling up inside of us. And that is that nobody can take what has been set aside for us. It's impossible. So good for them. Let them have it. They should all be well. It has nothing to do with me. Nobody's taking what should be mine. Let it be clear in my mind, my borders. Then I'm a Nahar, and it's a positive, positive thing. Next, we come to the Tzipor. The Tzipor is the image that the Baal Kavod should envision. Why? The Baal Kavod is somebody who's an egotist. He is somebody who is a narcissist. He just has a very inflated image of himself, and he's very inflexible. He has a very hard time making room for other people. So he should imagine a Tzipor, because a bird is a light creature and can easily fly above, making room for others. And that's the message to the Baal Kavod. This life is not just about you. We have to learn how to have humility. Think about how important humility is in Shalom, to be able to apologize even when we don't feel that we're wrong. But the Baal Kavod can feel that anava, can feel that flexibility if he or she can imagine the bird, that lightweight creature who can fly above and easily make room for other people. And lastly, we have the kedera, the pot. This is the image that the Baal Taiva should envision. A Baal Taiva has issues with his relationships, because he's always thinking with his ravenous appetite for his taivos, what's in it for me? And he doesn't care about other people. And so the Baal Taiva should think about the selfless pot. The pot says there are these two entities that have a difficult time coexisting. They're called fire and water, but I'll be the one who gets between them to make shalom between them. And it's okay if I get blackened in the process. Put me on a stove. The fire will boil the water. The water won't extinguish the fire. These two entities can get along. And it's okay if I'm scorched in the process. So let the Baal Taiva, who's just thinking about what's in it for me, let him envision the pot. So I just want to end with a story that I heard from Rabbi Krohn, that really teaches us the proper perspective we should have when it comes to our relationships, hopefully to motivate us to make shalom. There was a couple, and they had very differing personalities. The wife was much more easygoing. The husband was much more on top of things. And because she wasn't always so punctual, and the house was not always as neat as he'd like, it definitely led to some tense moments in their marriage. But the wife would always say these three Hebrew words and diffuse many tense moments. She would say, "Ze lo chashov." She would say to her husband, in the final analysis, does it really matter? Is this really important? So one summer, the family was spending the summer in the Catskills at a bungalow colony, and the husband would have to go to the city for work, but he would join the family for Shabbos. Thursday night, the wife calls her husband and she says, "We're out of checks. Would you be able, when you come up for Shabbos, to bring a new box of checks?" And he's Mr. Responsible. He says, "Not a problem," right? When he gets off the phone with her, he orders the checks, he puts them in a shopping bag, and he brings them up to the bungalow colony when he joins his family for Shabbos. So it's Shabbos morning, and he enters the kids' room, and he sees hanging on the crib is the shopping bag with the unopened box of checks. And he's really upset. He's thinking to himself, "My wife called me long distance. This was an emergency. She needed the checks. And it obviously wasn't an emergency, because here we are Shabbos morning and the box of checks have still remained unopened in the shopping bag. And is this the place that you leave checks, like hanging on a crib in the kids' room?" So he really wanted to yell at his wife, but he held himself back. He thought of his wife's three words, "Zelo chashov," and he thought, "Is this really worth ruining the atmosphere of Shabbos? I'm only with my family for so many hours during the week," and he let it go. He returned to the city for the week, and the following Shabbos, he returns to the bungalow with his family. And Erev Shabbos, he walks into the kids' room, and lo and behold, there is the box of checks, unopened, in the shopping bag, on the crib. And now he's livid. And he's just going to yell, and he's going to give it to his wife. But again, he thinks that lo chashov, and he holds his tongue, and they have a beautiful Shabbos, a beautiful atmosphere in the home. That following Tuesday, when he's back in the city, he gets a phone call. His wife, who had been expecting, there were some complications with the pregnancy, and she was rushed to the hospital. And by the time he arrived, it was too late. His wife had been niftar. And he returned back to the bungalow colony in shock, broken. And the first thing he does is he enters the kids' room and he sees the unopened box of checks in that shopping bag hanging on the crib. And he opens up the box of checks. And on the first check, he writes a check to the Chevra Kadisha. And on the second check, he writes a check for the funeral. And Rabbi Krohn says that this man kept that shopping bag for the rest of his life. And he wrote on that shopping bag three Hebrew words. Zelo chashov. The lesson that he learned in death, we have to learn in life. What can we say in these next 3 weeks? Zelo chashov. It's really not that important. How can I heal an estrangement? How can I say I'm sorry? How can I accept an apology? How can I avoid machlokas? This is the time to make shalom, because we so badly need Mashiach, and shalom is our roadmap to Geulah.